This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 111. I'm Veronica Belmont.
That's Mrs. Veronica Belmont. You understand.
Mrs. Veronica Belmont. Yes. Does that count?
I'm married.
Does that count if I don't take my husband's name?
Oh, yeah,
I still get to be Mrs., right?
I mean, you can be Ms. if you want to be all 20th century, 21st century.
Okay.
But yeah.
Mrs. Veronica Belmont.
Because we made such a big deal about the bachelorette party.
Did we? I don't remember much
last
from that
episode,
time.
We had Anton on. I was like, woo, it's Veronica's single for the last episode.
Oh, now yeah. You're
congratulations.
And now I'm an old lady. I don't even have anything to drink tonight.
Really? You don't have anything?
No, I just got home. I didn't really have time.
Yeah, you had a busy day.
I had a busy day.
Huh? But I'm still drinking.
I wish I had a beer. I think that's what I would rather have. I don't really feel like wine. Huh?
You don't have any beer in the house?
No beer. No beer.
I'm having a beer. I'm having a Racer 5.
Oh, that's good.
No.
I served that at my wedding.
I know you did. I was very impressed.
Thank you. Anyway, in case you didn't know, this is the science fiction and fantasy show where we discuss right. The latest books that we are reading, the new stuff that's coming out in the world of genre fiction, and talk about what you guys are talking about over on our Goodreads forums.
Yes, and let us kick off with something that we're not doing on the video show anymore. Let us know how you guys feel about that. But we feel like the news is very much appreciated in the audio podcast, and we have these little stats on the video version, and people weren't as interested in the news over there. So maybe this is the thing that, like, everybody's all worried about, like, oh, but the audio podcast is just not, it's going to get, we're going to focus on the audio podcast and give you the quick burns.
All right, so we have a note from Boing Boing. Apparently, Joe Haldeman is going to be doing a writing workshop.
Yeah, Starship Sofa, which not only is hard to say, but also intercaps, which makes it even harder, is presenting a series of web lectures by some top sci-fi writers. So Kim Stanley Robertson, Paolo Bacigalupi, really, really like top level people, where they'll be talking about the art of writing sci-fi, taking questions. And the first writer to take the mic is Joe Haldeman. And he'll be up for listening to on November 11th.
Is this something that is happening in person as well? Or are they only online?
I think it's only online. I have not delved far enough in it to be 100% sure, but from what I get out there, it's web lectures, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all online as far as I know.
And
maybe some special people get invited to be in person.
Is the date on this? Let's see. It looks like it's November 11th.
Haldeman, yeah.
November 11th and at 1600 to 1730 Greenwich Mean Time. So figure that one out for yourselves on Sunday. And, you know, I would love to do that. I'm going to add it to my calendar because you can do that on the Eventbrite page.
Now,
but you do have to pay for it. It's not free.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to experience it live, you have to pay £20 plus a £1.15 fee. But you can be anywhere in the world. You don't have to show up, right? Because it's online. So
okay. Well, what time? What time is that? I mean, that's got to be.
That's like eight in the morning.
8 hours. That's 8 hours ahead of us, right?
Yeah.
Or later than us. Yeah, it's eight hours later than us.
Yeah, so 1600 would be like 8 a.m. for us, I think.
Hmm. That sounds
early in the morning.
That's not that bad.
You're a morning person.
Yeah, kind of. Depends. Not lately.
Sometimes.
Not lately. Not so much with the getting up early.
Well, maybe just getting a new book from Rudy Rucker would be more your speed.
Because
then you can read it any time of day you want. And Rudy Rucker, who is like one of the stalwarts of cyberpunk, has launched a new novel called Turing and Burroughs, which he describes as beatnik science fiction.
Yeah, this sounds really awesome. So on the back cover it says, "What if Alan Turing, founder of the modern computer age, escaped assassination by the Secret Service to become the lover of beat author William Burroughs? What if they mutated into giant shape-shifting slugs, fled the FBI, raised Burroughs' wife from the dead, and tweaked the H-bombs of Los Alamos? A wild beatnik adventure, compulsively readable.
Readable.
I don't know why I couldn't read that font for a
second. Readable.
Readable. Hysterically funny, with insane warps and twists, with a bad attitude throughout." That does sound pretty fascinating, actually. So I when I read this at first, I got confused because I didn't remember Alan Turing being assassinated by the Secret Service.
No, he killed himself eating a cyanide-laden apple.
Huh.
But what Rudy Rucker's saying is, no, he didn't. They tried to kill him with a cyanide-laden apple, and he escaped.
Hmm. Well, I think this sounds like a very, very original kind of story. So I'm curious to read it. I've got so many books on my to-read list right now.
I know,
but
me too.
I've always been a huge William Burroughs fan, and I Turing invented the modern computer age.
Rudy Rucker is like a legend in his own right, mm-hmm. and he's doing this on his own. You can buy it direct from his site. You can buy it as an ebook, or from the Kindle store as a print-on-demand book. Or for the Kindle store or as a print-on-demand book. So it's kind of cool that Rudy's like, you know what? Screw you, establishment. I'm going my own way.
Yeah, I think that's great. Didn't William Burroughs kill his wife accidentally?
With the William Tell thing? I can never remember if that's legend or real.
Hold on, I have to look this up now.
It definitely is a story, but I don't remember if it's like a Snopes thing or...
Yeah, oh, geez. It's not... I can't find it. On his Wikipedia page.
What? The internet has failed us.
I can't find it.
Well, you do that. I'll tell him about the next story.
He was convicted in the manslaughter of his second wife, Joan Vollmer.
Oh, well, he had an extra.
It's
the second wife. That's horrible. I'm sorry.
I don't think he killed his first wife. No.
Good. I'm sorry that he killed any of his wives, frankly. Yeah, that's awful.
That is awful. Anyway.
So TechCrunch reports on an author named Sylvia Hartman who is writing a novel on Google Docs publicly
and
letting you watch her progress. If you go to, let's see, what's the goo.gl/b6b F. We'll have it in the show notes at swordmaser.com. You can watch her live in real time, and she has a schedule up of when she'll be writing and when you can watch. I actually did this. I'm not famous enough for anyone to have paid attention, but one year on NaNoWriMo, I did a Google Doc, and I published it to the web, and I didn't share it with a lot of people, so because I'm not as brave as Sylvia Hartman, but kind of interesting to be doing that and knowing like, oh, people can see this revision. People see how horribly I type and spell. As if they didn't already know. Like, it's daunting, but kind of fun.
This is very cool because she's not too far. She's only on the very first part of the first section. But she has a table of contents written out already. Actually, maybe if I click on it. Oh, no, sorry. She has a linked table of contents, so you can click through to the different sections. So she's actually moving along quite well.
She has more that can fit in one Google Doc. That's how...
That's what it is.
That's what's going
on.
Wait,
there's a length to a Google Doc?
I didn't know that either until I saw this post.
Or maybe she just wanted it to be sectioned out in a certain way.
No, it says on her main page, like, I ran out of room, and so I had to...
Oh, wow.
The manuscript has already exceeded the length that can be stored in one Google document, so it's been split over the following.
That's very cool. You know what? This is a great thing for aspiring writers to check out, too, because you really get a chance to see how established writers kind of start their whole process and, you know, what it looks like for a writer to be actively writing. And, yeah, you know, this makes me think, oh, God, NaNoWriMo's coming. Oh, God.
I know. I'm excited.
Oh, God.
actually. I'm pretty excited. I'm stoked. The Dragon Lords, a novel by Sylvia Hartman. You're not going to do this for your NaNoWriMo, are you?
I don't think I'm going to do this for my NaNoWriMo.
There's no reason why you should.
Yeah. That is super
Nano,
brave, though.
National Novel Writing Month is about taking away the barriers, not putting up new ones.
Not making things more confusing and and difficult and frightening.
John DiNardo of SF Signal fame, the man behind SF Signal, is doing some guest posts over Kirkus Reviews. I just found these. Part 4 is up already, but demystifying science fictional terms and including reading recommendations to help you understand. So if you're new or even if you're just like, I like science fiction, but sometimes it confuses the hell out of me, you can go and check these out. He goes into, in part 4, for instance, he goes into psionics, genetic engineering, precognition, telekinesis. So has like flash forward as an example of precognition. It's a great thing. I went back and looked at some of the earlier parts as well, and he's going to keep doing it. Just kind of saying like, hey, do clones confuse you? Let me explain what they're all about. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we got telekinesis, psionic. Yeah, that's pretty neat. I was expecting it to be a little bit longer, but I guess since it is in parts,
yeah, I think
that makes sense.
It's a series for Kirkus. And they're, of course, promoting SF Signal, so it's a nice little cross-promotional thing as well.
I wonder how he chooses the terms.
I don't know. I don't know if he's taking suggestions. I didn't see that.
And I wonder where he gets his definitions from, if he just sources them from the internet or
from his massive
brain. Sci-fi mind.
Probably.
No, he's a very smart guy. This is a cool resource. And even if you just want to brush up on a couple of terms and their definitions, it's a good place to start. And speaking of John DiNardo, he wrote an article over on SF Signal about Gail Carriger and Etiquette and Espionage, which is her upcoming novel. It's the first book in her young adult finishing school series, which comes 25 years before The Parasol Protectorate, which is one of my current favorite series, which I think I'm done with right now, actually. And I'm sad about that because...
Well, but now you can go read these.
Yeah. It covers Mademoiselle Geraldine, which I believe is maybe a character that is called back to in The Parasol Protectorate, which is kind of cool because it is the same world. So if this is on Audible, I think I might check this out when it comes out because I love listening to her audiobooks. She's one of my favorite authors right now.
Well, you will be very excited about our next author guide video show, won't you?
I guess I will.
Yeah, because we're having Gail Carriger on. I hope you guys liked the author guide approach to the author interviews. We're trying to figure out a way to make it all feel natural, and we're like, you know, if we're gonna have these authors in and interview them, let's just bust it out, like, you know. And so Aaron has been fantastic in agreeing to make us whiteboards. He made a Gail Carriger one that will be in the Gail Carriger episode coming up. His Sherry Priest one was fantastic, and we're gonna do a little more of like, hey, this is what this author is all about, and you get to meet them in the show as well. So I'm looking forward. Gail Carriger, because she's local, I think she's going to come up and be in the studio and get to meet Lem in person.
Yeah, I know. I'm very excited about it. She seems awesome and very up to it. I also think it's really cool that we've had two female authors on the show so recently, and you know, similar in styles as well, which was not on purpose.
Somewhat, yeah.
But it's cool to see the different takes on similar kinds of stories.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So should we hit the calendar?
Let's hit it like we're gonna make it fall down.
That didn't make any sense.
Nah.
Nope.
Oh, they ran out of steam.
I think you can do better.
Okay. Let's hit it like an Irishman on St. Patrick's Day.
Ooh, don't. Yeah.
I'm part Irish.
All right. October 1st, we have the Sword and Laser podcast. That is the one you were listening to. Yay. Congrats.
Congrats to us. That's it.
All right. That was all I was
going to
say.
So you're phoning that one in. Okay. October 2nd, Pirate Cinema by Cory Doctorow. He just had a Charles Stross combo book that he wrote out. That guy, he cannot stop writing. So Pirate Cinema by Cory Doctorow coming out tomorrow. Sailor Twain or The Mermaid in the Hudson by Mark Siegel. 1635, Papal Stakes by Eric Flint and Charles Gannon. That's another team that's just like cranking them out. Redoubt, Book 4 of the Collegium Chronicles, a Valdemar novel by Mercedes Lackey. The Lost Stars, Tarnished Night by Jack Campbell. Dark Currents, Agent of Hell by Jacqueline Carey.
That one's supposed to be really good.
Is it?
It's supposed to be
Is that a vaginal fantasy-ish?
Maybe.
Is that in that arena?
I'm not entirely sure, but okay. If it is, I'm going to make it the next vaginal fantasy pick. Actually, we already read Jekyll and Perry, so they won't let me.
I like the title of The Woman Who Died a Lot, a Thursday Next novel by Jasper Ford, and The Second Ship by Richard Phillips.
Mm-hmm. And then on October 5th, we have the Sword and Laser Book Club video kickoff of Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell. We also have The Hydrogen Sonata on October 9th by Ian M. Banks.
I'm looking forward to that one, too. It's another one I tried to want to add to my list. I have too many good things to read.
I know. Into the Woods, Tales from the Hollows and Beyond by Kim Harrison. And on the 11th, we have Place of Dead Kings by Jeffrey Wilson. On October 12th, we have the Sword and Laser video with guest Gail Carriger. On the 15th, we have the Sword and Laser podcast interview with C. Willow Wilson. And that's about all we're going to go up to right now.
Yeah, well, by
all these ladies we're interviewing.
Yeah, but that on that podcast with C. Willow Wilson, we'll let you know what else is coming out after that. But there is a Greg Benford and Larry Niven novel, Bull of Heaven, coming out on October 16th. Mm-hmm. I know that one's highly anticipated.
Yay. A lot of good stuff. So let's take a moment, though, to thank our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions for many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this show, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Now, we are recommending, rather, Tom is recommending The Wind Through the Keyhole, The Dark Tower by Stephen King.
Now, here's the thing. It's a Dark Tower novel.
Yeah, of course
I know.
It is, yeah.
A lot of you are like, you know what, Tom? I was sick of your whole Dark Tower expedition. I was glad it was over. What are you talking about? But this is...
Some may say that, yes.
In the Dark Tower universe. So if you're into the Dark Tower universe as I am, you're going to love it. But it is also self-contained. There's a little bit of intro material at the beginning and end that is kind of characters from the Gunslinger series. But frankly, you could enjoy this as just a really interesting nested story Stephen King novel. Kind of like Cloud Atlas, not as ranging as Cloud Atlas in time and space, but it starts with the Dark Tower characters. And they're in a storm, so the gunslinger starts telling a story about something that happened to him in his past, and in the middle of that story, he starts telling one of the characters a story from Gilead's past, like a folk tale. It's really good. So it's a good standalone Dark Tale novel if you're just looking for something that takes place in an alternate universe with ancient machines and a whole folktale sort of dragons are in it. Veronica, there is okay. A dragon in this.
Gotcha.
So it might be a good entree into Dark Tower if you haven't been interested before. And obviously, if you're into the Dark Tower universe, I think it's worth it. It takes place right after Wizard and Glass, before Wills of the Cala.
So it's part of it's built in already to the existing storyline.
Exactly.
Okay. And if you want this book, head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
That's the best part. It's free.
It's free.
Freaking free.
audiblepodcast.com/sword for your free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today.
You know, what? Huge thanks to Audible for like constantly renewing. I mean, little behind the veil thing, like every 3 months is a quarter. So every quarter we wait to see if like, oh, are we going to get more Audible sponsorship? And they're like clockwork, man. They come back every time. So
that's awesome.
Do a little at Audible on Twitter or something. Give them big thanks, especially if you're already an Audible subscriber because of Sword and Laser, because we love them.
We do love them. And not just because they are our sponsor. I'm a huge Audible fan.
I loved Audible before they were a sponsor. So yeah.
I loved them before they were cool.
It's not a competition.
It is now a competition.
I loved them before you were born.
That
except
is
they
possible
didn't exist.
Because yeah. You're old.
I'm time traveling.
Let's head into Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Hey, so happy Banned Books Week.
Yeah, it's going on right now. You know, when I worked at Half Price Books back in Austin, Texas, Banned Books Week was always like a big deal for us. Like the chain itself really got into it and everybody in the store got into it. And we would put on display with big signs like, these books have been banned. Danger.
Danger, 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 buy them.
But it's all about books that are challenged by various groups or various parents to be removed from libraries, usually from school libraries. And I sort of understand the impulse of like, oh, our children should not be exposed to this. But a lot of times it's like, really? They shouldn't be exposed to James and the Giant Peach?
Yeah.
I mean,
or the dictionary.
Yeah.
We have a post from Tyler over on Goodreads who says, tomorrow marks the beginning of Banned Books Week. I created a display at our library, and in researching which books to put out, I found some interesting titles. He goes on to list Green Eggs and Ham, Brown Bear, Brown Bear, What Do You See?, The Dictionary, Sylvester and the Magic Pebble, Alice in Wonderland, James and the Giant Peach, Alice, which is the young adult series, A Light in the Attic, Harriet, The Spy. And then he goes on to say, and less shocking, but still interesting, Naked Lunch. Not that shocking, I guess. The Harry Potter series, The Canterbury Tales, The God Delusion, and A Clockwork Orange.
You know, I think what happens is they look at this and they're like, you know what? The second graders should not be allowed to read Naked Lunch. And you know what? I'm right there with you. The second graders should not. The second graders will not understand Naked Lunch. But come on. Naked Lunch is a work of intense literature. And yes, it should be read in the right context and with mm-hmm. guidance, and that's what the school should do. But you don't just ban it 100%.
Yeah. I think they don't give people enough credit sometimes. And then he goes on to say, and of course, the classics, 1984, Brave New World, Huckleberry Finn, Lord of the Flies, Fahrenheit 451, and The Bible, and many more.
I know. The Bible's a classic. Mm-hmm. I remember that one. We always put that one on the display. Yeah, banned. Mm-hmm. It takes all kinds. So anyway, really banning books is not the way to work this out.
No.
Reading.
And also people have to realize that even if you read something, it's not necessarily going to inform all your life choices.
What? Wait.
Sometimes fiction is fiction.
I read Ayn Rand, and now I'm a raving libertarian who hates all of culture.
There you go. Well, that's a bad example because
Then I went and I read the Communist Manifesto, and now I'm a communist who wants all capitalism to die.
There you go.
See? But I read Ayn Rand and the Communist Manifesto. What am I going to do, Veronica?
Oh. Neil Gaiman actually posted a list of the top 10 most frequently challenged books in 2011 on his Tumblr. Some of the ones we mentioned are in there. Also, the Hunger Games trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
The heroes. Gossip Girl series.
What?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Reasons of
Hey, still just... reading. I don't care what you're reading, really, at the end of the day.
No, I really don't. No. You can read whatever you want.
There you go. We're not going to ban anything, except maybe 50 Shades of Grey. Anyway, okay.
No.
No.
We need to ban 50 Shades of Grey. That's the point. That's okay. The whole point.
Okay. I won't be a hypocrite. Or will I? We also have a thread from Dave who has a question. Is sci-fi and fantasy exhausted?
It's very tired.
Is it tired? Does it need a good nap?
Yeah.
Now, this comes from a larger article over at the Los Angeles Review of Books. And it's a little, it's a pretty significant article. It's a little TLDR for the show.
I'm glad you caught that because I really stupidly would have said at the Lair View of Books. Because it's LA Review of Books.
That's usually something Veronica would do. You silly goose. But Dave did pick out one section that is relevant to his discussion. The overwhelming sense one gets working through so many stories that are presented at the very best that science fiction and fantasy have to offer is exhaustion. Not so much physical exhaustion, though it is more tiring than reading a bunch of short stories really has any right to be. It is more as though the genres of the fantastic themselves have reached a state of exhaustion. In the main, there is no sense that the writers have any real conviction about what they are doing. Rather, the genre has a set of tropes to be repeated and repeated until all meaning has been drained from them. For example, Dolly by Elizabeth Baer in the Gardner DeZoy collection is a story of police investigating a murder that may have been committed by a robot. It's not a bad story in the sense that it is efficiently told with enough detail of character and setting to reward the reader, but the story itself deliberately harks back to the robot series that Isaac Asimov was writing in the 1940s. Baer has brought the trope up to date, but she has not extended the idea or found anything radically new in it. Asimov's stories can still entertain, and Baer's stories is much the same, but to find that one of what we are told are the best stories of 2011 is plowing a furrow that is more than 70 years old is somehow dispiriting.
No, it shouldn't be. I don't think it should be dispiriting. I think what it shows is that science fiction is a mature genre. Mm-hmm. It's not a new genre where none of the stories have been told before. And maybe that's less exciting. Maybe one of the cool things about science fiction, especially, you know, from the late 1800s through the 50s, was these are stories that no one ever thought to tell. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. And I'm not, but I don't think that means that there aren't any new stories to tell in sci-fi, it means that we can now do what other genres do and retell stories with a new twist. And that's fun. That's cool. If that's all science fiction was doing, yeah, I'd be upset too. I'd be like, oh, it's just, you know, it's more rehashing. But taking a robot murder story and putting your own spin on it, I think is fine. I mean, how many coming of age stories have been told since fiction was invented?
Well, exactly. This is not, as Derek goes on to say, this is not something that's mutually exclusive to sci-fi and fantasy. I mean, this is happening in all different sorts of genre and all sorts of different times of entertainment mediums. It's just... Like you
sure some people could reduce this to say, like, well, every story is a hero's journey story. And right. So there's no new stories at all anyway. And that doesn't mean that these are bad stories or that they're not, you know, and we're getting this kind of trough in science fiction that I think has everybody feeling a crisis of confidence because fantasy is getting all the love, but that's just cycles. These things go in cycles. And so right now, science fiction is really in its introspective phase. And we're doing a lot of stories that are bounded by physics and people are trying different things. And that's how you come up with the new crazy stories that are going to blow you away. That's how fantasy ended up with your Joe Abercrombies and your Patrick Rothfusses, because it spent a while being introspective and going, well, wait a minute, in this post-Tolkien era, what new stories are left to tell? And eventually they figured it out. Mm-hmm. That'll happen with science fiction, I think.
And hey, if it encourages more people to go even further out there, outside the box, right, then that's fine. And I think that is going to happen. That happens more and more. And I think it's fun to see when something totally different does come out of the woodwork. So should we talk about the book? It is the 1st of October, after
all.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll do our video kickoff of Cloud Atlas at the end of this week. Mm-hmm. But it is the 1st of October. So those of you who did the rogue read are rogues, but everybody else can start right now. And I'm excited to see what else people are thinking. We know a lot about what people are thinking because of the rogue read. But I want to see what the folks who didn't get excited to go off and read it on their own, and now we're like, okay, you guys are saying to read this, I'm going to give it a shot, because it is a really intricate story.
It's, you know, and
it is very different.
I'm finding,
from any point to point.
Well, it's very, yes, it's from story to story, it's very different. I found it kind of interesting last night when I was reading how we've been selecting these kinds of stories lately. These. Just think about like Hyperion, for example, and Foundation, and now Cloud Atlas. These stories that have been very, you know, Canterbury Tales-esque in many ways.
Sure.
And I wonder why we keep doing that. It's not on purpose.
I didn't even think about that. You're right, because Hyperion is Canterbury Tales. Like, it's a series of stories that eventually tell a larger story. Mm-hmm. Foundation is a series of short stories that progress an overarching arc, and Cloud Atlas is nested stories. So the stories don't relate to each other except tenuously, but it's like a Russian nesting doll where you get the full stories eventually. You just have to plow through and get to the middle story.
My feet smell terrible. Oh my God. What is wrong with me? I just like tucked my foot under my chair and I was like,
Are you a salt miner?
Oh, no, I got to stop wearing these shoes, man. I am wearing these suede shoes every day, and it was like 95 out, and it was just not...
It's probably more the heat than anything, but don't wear suede on a 90-degree day.
God, I've never known myself to be a stinky-footed lady.
Because there's a scene in Wind Through the Keyhole by Stephen King where the salt miners all take off their boots, and it stinks up the bar.
Oh, okay. Good to know. No, I'm not a salt miner. How funny is that we've been picking these kinds of stories lately? I don't know what brought that on or why that's been happening, but someone mentioned that in the Goodreads forums, actually.
Yeah.
Well, they made a connection between Foundation and this book, and then I was like, but that's funny because I was kind of making the connection earlier between Foundation and Hyperion, and so then I put it all together. And, you know, some people are also taking a bit of issue with the fact that the story is not overwhelmingly genre fiction. Like, there are definitely science fictional aspects to it.
Sure.
But it is more than that, or just not all of that. I mean, that's
well, it's not
all
squarely
it is.
Squarely within the genre. Mm-hmm. And that's a fair criticism. I knew that going in.
Why, Tom? Why did you do this to us?
It's experimental. It is genre. It is. It's maybe its own genre, but you know, it is fiction that's not like a mainstream coming of age novel. This is basically saying, let's look at the breadth and span of history. You know, so yeah, it starts off feeling like a historical novel, but we have lots of historical novels, and then it progresses into a far, far apocalyptic future. So the middle two stories are the most science fictional of all the stories, but it tries to tie them together with the kind of the overarching meaning of being human. And while that is an aim of good literature overall, and the you know, the Booker Prize type of stories, it's also the aim of science fiction to be like, we're using this genre to kind of shed light on what it means to be us by letting us escape from the mundanity of everyday life. And so I like the fact that this combines both. It's like, yeah, here's some of the stuff that you can totally identify with, but here's some stuff that you can't. And there's parallels between them. So I like having them set down right next to each other. We get that story of a 1970s woman who's fighting the power, and it's like, oh, it's a very familiar story. Mm-hmm. And then we get Song Me 451 in the corporocracy in the future.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, those are the same stories. And it's really cool to me to be like, the genre and the typical story actually play off each other. And then there's the science, maybe it's a fantasy element of the reincarnation
I'm not done yet. Okay.
Well, that's not a spoiler. It's basically just saying like there are characters in each of these stories that have a connection.
Well, there's always at least one mention of a previous character or topic.
And
I'm sure there's more that I'm missing.
There with a birthmark in every story. That's possibly okay. A spoiler, I guess. But if you're not going to know, it's very subtle. I didn't notice it until I read about it somewhere. I'm like, oh, yeah, duh. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm enjoying it so far. I read the first half a lot faster because I was on my little mini moon. So I had a lot of time to read.
Uh-huh.
Mini honeymoon. But yeah, I've been having a hard time keeping up the pace since then. But hey, I've got a whole month to go, so it'll be okay.
You know, I found like once I got through the Hawaii post-apocalyptic story, which is
that's what I'm on right now.
Like once I got through that, mm-hmm. Then it was just like all downhill, and like I was listening to it all the time because I was like, oh right, now we're into this story. I want to know how that one ends. Oh, now I want to know how this one ends.
Oh, like, so they come back around really after that.
I got really voracious after that because every story was getting wrapped up.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh right, yeah. When we left her, she was like on the bridge. Oh my gosh.
Oh, cool. That's good because I was looking forward to that. I think this is really funny too, and a funny story to share with you guys is that the night before I got married, Tom and I started to, not the night before you and I got married because we're not married.
No, but I married you.
You married
but
me.
But I performed the ceremony.
Tom married me, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
We started talking about Cloud Atlas, and I was having a little trouble getting into it, and Tom, you know, was encouraging me. We ended up just having basically a podcast, except
yeah.
No one was recording it. And Ryan, my now husband, was like, you guys could do this for a really long time, huh? Maybe we should get going.
Maybe we should snip this
Maybe
in the bud.
Maybe we should nip this in the bud before
He was
I'm
very
here for
nice
4 hours.
About it. Sort of like, you know, I don't want to put a damper, but if I let it go, it's probably going to go all night.
But yeah, I'm excited for this read. I tried to get in contact with David Mitchell to have him on the show, but I never heard back. So if any of you guys out there know how to contact David Mitchell, I tried really hard.
Yeah,
it didn't happen. So one of the first times an author's just never even gotten back. So he's busy though. He's got the movie coming out, so he's probably got handlers now.
He probably has a lot of requests right now because of
the movie.
The Wachowski brothers or siblings movie.
By the way, we should do a San Francisco screening if we can.
Yeah, I would totally be into that.
So the movie comes out on the 26th, right?
Same day as Windows 8.
Oh, crud. I'm going to be at the Geek Media Expo, so I won't be able to do that.
Oh.
In Nashville.
What?
Yeah.
You're going to be... Oh.
Yeah,
oh, right. That was the postcard from
Dragon. The postcard from
Dragon. Yeah, I remember.
I'm going to be at the Geek Media Expo in Nashville, Tennessee on Friday the 26th until the 28th. And doing a lot of stuff there. So if anyone,
well,
you guys
you can
are
have
going,
a geek screening in Nashville. Then.
Maybe I
I'll
will.
Have one in San Francisco.
But anyway, it should be a lot of fun. So yeah, Cloud Atlas is the pick for this month. So if you haven't grabbed it yet, check it out in your library or at your local bookstore or on Kindle or at Amazon or wherever you buy books.
I also just finished reading Existence by David Brin.
I don't know why when I saw you write this, I read it as Existence. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah. That's funny. I didn't even think about that.
I don't know why I thought that. Yeah.
This book reminded me of all things of the Illuminatus trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson in large parts. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit manic and lots of crazy characters and crazy puns, which Brin is, I think, kind of known for. Mm-hmm. But it spans a large period of time, and there's some pretty jarring jumps ahead in time. But in the end, I kind of liked what it was saying about humanity's place in the universe and what aliens might be doing to contact us. It deals a lot with why haven't we heard from aliens? Mm. If there's so many alien civilizations, like why
Where
haven't anybody?
Where are they at, dogs?
It has some really interesting thoughts about that. So I won't spoil it, but cool book. And I'm also reading The Isles of the Forsaken by Carolyn Ives Gilman. I have no idea why this was in my to read section of Goodreads. Someone recommended it at some point, so I apologize if it was you.
Are you very
but
confused?
It is really good.
Oh, good.
And I'm really enjoying it. It's sort of a loose allegory of the British Empire, but an entirely different world with the Forsaken Islands, and there's these gray people who have special powers, and it's fantasy. It's
nice.
Good.
I am reading right now, or I'm reading Cloud Atlas, of course. I'm still finishing up on the Codex Alera by Jim Butcher. I think I'm on the fifth book now, I think. I just finished the fifth book in the Gale Carriger Parasol Protectorate, as I mentioned. We also have new vaginal fantasy picks for this month, which names are escaping me right now. I have to start reading those, too. I never even finished the first one from last month. I only got halfway through. It didn't really affect the conversation, though, oddly. too much. It was about dinosaurs.
That's happened to us before.
I'll just leave it at that. The conversation didn't.
One or the other of us may or may not have finished the book.
All right, so we're reading Poison Study, Study Number 1 by Maria V. Snyder, and Master of Crows by Grace Draven. Those are our two picks. So I'm going to be reading those at some point soon. So I've got a lot on my docket right now, including also the new Laurie R. King novel, Garment of Shadows, which came out on the 4th of September.
No wonder you're having a hard time finishing books, because you're reading like 15 books at a time.
I'm not reading that one yet. I just it's sitting there wanting to be read really badly, and there's a couple of those kinds of books. And my new Paper White is coming on Wednesday. Yay! So I can start
I've got the Butcher of Anderson Station. Butcher of Anderson Station short story by James S.A. Corey is just sitting on my Kindle app on all my platforms, on my Nexus 7, on my iPad, like on my phone, everywhere, just staring at me like I'm a short story.
I haven't even updated my oh of course. And The Dirty Streets of Heaven, the new Tad Williams, is out. Is it out? I think it's out.
I bought it, so it should be out.
Do you have it? Yeah,
I have it on Kindle.
I really super want to read that.
No audiobook yet. I'm hoping the audiobook drops soon.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, because I'd like to do the whisper sync between the Kindle and the audiobook.
Mm, good point. Well, hopefully that'll change. Also, I still haven't finished Year Zero. I still haven't read Kill Decision. I like I have these are all books like I really, really, really want to read and I just haven't had time. Felicia Day, I'm pretty sure, is a cyborg.
Yeah, no, I'm almost certain.
Can we just talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I think we should. I think it's an important issue that needs to be raised to the
podcast. Frankly, it's unfair how fast she reads. And I don't know how or why or how it is physically possible that she reads all the books she reads. If you're friends with her on Goodreads, it is like a punch in the face every day because she's like, oh, read this one, read this one, read this one. I'm like, what? You have like 60 jobs.
I have never
you have more
met
jobs than
someone
I do. Like, I don't even
who
understand.
Reads more. She reads more books than Patrick Norton.
She does.
Patrick Norton reads books like he's eating peanuts. And she puts him to shame.
He's like, oh, I sat in the park and read Anathem. It's like, what?
I know,
Shut
right?
up. No, you didn't. He's like, well, it's only like 1,200 pages. And you're like, what? Who are you?
I want to do reading comprehension tests on Felicia and Patrick.
And, you know, also another Patrick Rothfuss is also like that.
Really?
He's also one of those like book devourers. Which I thought I read fast. I've always considered myself a very fast reader, but they just put me to shame. All
of them. Is Felicia secretly named Patrick? Maybe there's a connection.
Maybe.
Here.
Maybe it's a Patrick thing. Mm. Felicia Patrick Day. That's what I'm going to call her from now on. Like, why are you calling me Patrick?
We're going to need some
That doesn't make any sense.
No, I know.
But yeah, it's making me really jealous. I just wish I didn't pass out the second I hit the pillow. I think that's my problem.
That's my problem with print. That's why the new Ted Williams, I'm like, oh crap, I can't get an audiobook. It's going to take me 16 years to read this.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, what are you going to do? I'd love to have him back on the show, too, at some point.
Come on over, Ted.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Ted, come on up. You're local.
Come on.
Eat our dragon.
But let's get
to snacks.
Let's move on and get to a nice email that we got recently. Today, I think, actually, or yesterday. This comes to us from Laura, and she writes, I've always been an avid reader, but not a sci-fi fantasy reader until I started to listen to your audio podcast. I came by way of Buzz Out Loud, which, aww, for those of you who don't know, was a show that Tom and I and Molly Wood used to do over on CNET. Listening to all y'all talk about Game of Thrones so much has made me decide I had to give it a shot. Well, I started reading them in July, and I'm over halfway through the fifth book now. We're also watching the HBO series. I wanted to thank you for introducing me to such a great series that I would otherwise would not have missed. And to send you some pictures that I think of every time they talk about the old gods in the weirwood trees. Now, these pictures are amazing. She says they're from Orr Park in Montevideo, Alabama. They were done by a local artist by the name of Tingle.
I'm guessing it's Montevallo.
Montevallo?
If it was Texas, it would be. So I'm thinking Alabama might be similar.
Okay, so I shouldn't make the Y sound with the double L.
I'm just guessing, but they're cool pictures.
I guess 7 years of Spanish class will make you do that automatically without meaning to.
No, you're right. It's just there. Yeah.
So she says that Tingle has been carving the deadwood trees since at least 1993, and the pictures are really cool. I mean, that is kind of how I would imagine the weirwoods looking.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes so you guys can take a look at them. It is Tolkien-esque. It is weirwood. It's like every ant you've ever imagined.
So thank you, Laura. I'm glad you're enjoying the show, and I'm glad you're enjoying the books and the HBO series of Game of Thrones. It's all very good stuff, and hopefully it will lead you into even more wonderful worlds like that.
Yay! Thanks, Laura.
Yay! So thank you guys so much. If you want to leave us an email, you can do so at feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on Goodreads, and if you want to call and leave a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. That is 415-779-6736. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.